ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're back with Akura. In his way, he isn't there yet, but on his way to Vrindavan to see Krishna and bring Krishna to back to Mathura so he can kill Kamsa. Last 2 days we spent covering a rigorous philosophical message, and this one is a little easier. Text, so it's 10. Wait a minute, what happened? Okay, 10:38:12. And the BBT translation reads, all sins are destroyed and all good fortune is created by the Supreme Lord's qualities, activities, and appearances. And words that describe these three things, his qualities, activities, and appearances, words that describe these three things animate, beautify, and purify the world. On the other hand, words bereft of his glories are like the decorations on a corpse. So you may recognize, I'm sure you do, the Kleshagni and Shubhada, right? So that's from Nectar Devotion. It's Nectar Devotion. It's just taking essences from the Vedas. This is one of those essences. All sins are destroyed and all good fortune is created. Now, Rupa Goswami's teaching is on bhakti, and bhakti, even the sadhana stage, has these two capacities. All sins are destroyed. And all good fortune is created, so by bhakti, or here, created by the Supreme Lord's qualities, activities, and appearances. Of course, that includes his name. And then, and those sound vibrations, those words that describe these three things, animate, beautify, and purify the whole world. So, and conversely, decorations of a dead corpse, or decorations of a corpse, because corpses are dead. BBT purport reads, Srila Sridhar Swami brings up the following possible objection. Question. How can one who is devoid of ordinary ego, who is fully self-satisfied, engage in pastimes? It's a little bit like, you know, why did Shukadeva Goswami go study Bhagavatam from Krishna when he was already in Atmarama? He doesn't need anything, so he has no ordinary ego. Why would he do anything? So, same for the Lord. The answer is given here. Lord Krishna acts on the pure spiritual platform for the pleasure of his loving devotees, not for any kind of mundane gratification. For the pleasure of his loving devotees, not for any kind of mundane gratification. He works, but he doesn't work. There's no work for him, yet he does things. You know, that we discussed just a little bit yesterday. For example, he creates the four varnas system, but he doesn't do it. He does it, but he doesn't do it. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, topics of the Lord's birth, he who is unborn takes birth. His qualities, he who has no material qualities has spiritual qualities. He who has nothing to do but does activities. Topics of the Lord's birth, qualities and activities composed poetically, which destroy the sins of all people, give life to the reciter and listener. These topics endow the person with good qualities, such as mercy and freedom from illusion. And these topics purify the person, freeing him from the fault of ignorance. And then on the other hand, those words, though decorated with ornaments and qualities, if devoid of the Lord's qualities, devoid of the Lord's qualities, activities, and birth, are simply like a dead body with ornaments. Jiva Goswami writes, having stated that realizing Paramatma is difficult, Kuru stated that, Akura now criticizes the materialists who do not accept the Lord who appears as various Leela avatars for creating auspiciousness, even though he is easily attained. Words which describe the Mishrita, words which describe the Lord's qualities, activities, and birth, give life to the universe. Without those words, one is as if dead, like bellows. And then he makes reference to 2.3.18. You know that verse. Just by a relationship, those words first make life fruitful. Just by a relationship. That means relationship with Krishna. Words in relationship with Krishna make life fruitful. Then the words produce beauty in that person by revelation of the Lord's qualities. To support that statement, he refers to a well-known verse, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavat yakinchana sarvair gunais tatra samasate sura harava bhaktasya kuto mahad guna manoratena sati davato bahi. And his translation reads a little different. The devatas constantly dwell with all good qualities in that person who has pure bhakti for the Lord. There are no good qualities in the non-devotee who chases after temporary material objects with desire for material pleasure. Then the words purify everyone by destruction of bad desires, including the desire for liberation. People develop the qualities of those words. The words purify the universe. This indicates no qualification is necessary. Anyone becomes purified. This is famous. This happens because of the nature of the qualities, actions, and birth of the Lord. Namely, they are auspicious, destroying all suffering and bestowing all the best qualities and destroy all sins. So, Kleshagni Shubhada again. Just that sound vibration. Words completely devoid of the Lord's topics, the rikta, are like corpses. Even though they may be ornamented, the corpse is useless, unable to give life to another being, since it cannot produce sons, without any beauty, since it is Its very condition is so miserable and completely impure by its nature, unable to purify others. Sridhar Swami explains that the Lord gives mercy to others, not the Atmaramas, so they can see the pastimes. No, the Atmaramas may be instruments for the Lord, but it's the Lord that gives the mercy. With that in mind, Akura speaks this verse. Though Krishna appeared in that particular manner because he was attached to the people of Raja, because of their special prema, Akura felt the Lord would not reveal himself to him because of his lack of that prema. This is this Sanchari Bhav again. He's like, he appeared in Vrindavan because of the love of the residents of Vrindavan for him. So he knows of that special love that they have, he just doesn't have it. So maybe I won't see him, or I won't see him as they see him. In Sanatana Goswami, he uses this word vasana multiple times. So what does vasana mean? Impressions. And impressions create tendencies. That's another meaning. Past life tendencies, vasanas, or impression. It's similar to but different from. Sangskara is impression, and vasana is tendency due to, you can say, multiple impressions. So impressions, but bearing an active principle. Tendencies, past life tendencies. So, Sanatana Goswami writes, words mixed with his birth and activities destroy unlimited sins and vasanas. Thus, all suffering is destroyed. This also, that's these words, also generated the greatest piety, Sumangalai, by this, the highest happiness is achieved. Su indicates that it is indestructible, that Su Mangalai. Even if the talks are material or are mundane poetry, if mixed, Vimishra, with some topics of the Lord, they have a good effect. What to speak of the topics of the Lord unmixed with other topics? The affix vi, indicates the mixture is deficient or totally mixed. Activities refer to killing Putana, etc. Birth indicates his appearance and is included among the birth of the various avatars. These topics give life to the world, since after birth, the forms of the Lord are manifest. After his birth, forms of the Lord are manifest. If living beings are devoid of auspicious qualities, they are almost dead. These topics give beauty to the world. There is no auspiciousness in the presence of bad vasanas or in the presence of the desire for liberation. These words purify the universe, destroying the bad vasanas. Paragraph. There's no qualification necessary. The words affect the whole world. Vai indicates all, or it means well-known. Topics like the story of Ajamila are well-known. Words completely devoid of the Lord are useless. If there is even a little inclusion of the Lord's topics, it becomes auspicious. Last paragraph. Another meaning is this, quote, what can be said? He shows such great mercy to the jivas. Lifeless words, though pleasing, if somehow related to the Lord's birth and activities, become full of life and most excellent. Those words bring the universe to life and make it devoid of ahankar, or make it glorious. Sumbati, sumpanti. Those words even purify the universe. Corpses have no life, no auspiciousness, no beauty. It cannot purify anything. Similarly, words devoid of the Lord are worse than that. They are not auspicious, and by inspiring sinful acts, they take away life. This is what generally happens. The glory of the Lord's topics remains everywhere. Now he's in a chariot by himself. He's not having conversation with anybody, but he's contemplating the merit of glorifications of him. So that counts as glorification. Although he's the only one benefiting because he's just in his mind. But nonetheless, the whole world benefits because whatever's inside comes outside. So I'm going to end with, well, let me ask you, do are there standard verses in the Bhagavatam that resemble this verse that we just recited? Text 12. Yes. Where's that? In Narada Muni's discussion with Vyasadeva, Canto 1, Chapter 5. You know, the pale witch for the crows verse. You're familiar with that, right? Now when I say it, you'll remember it. So this is 1, 5, 10, and then 11. Those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for the crows. Since the all-perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive any pleasure there. And then following that is, on the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, form, pastimes, etc., of the unlimited Supreme Lord, is a different creation, full of transcendental words, directed toward bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Tadvagvasargo-janata-agaviplavo, that important verse. Such transcendental literature, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. So it's this promotion of the Bhagavatam's message directly with chapter 5 of Canto 1. And in this verse of Akur, it's just speaking in principle. That is one of the main reasons why we want Sadhu Sangha. Because in Sadhu Sangha, in that association, we're guaranteed, because Sadhu means devotee, we're going to hear topics of Krishna. And by hearing topics of Krishna, all these favorable things follow. And so regular hearing, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, regular hearing. Regular hearing. so many ways it's described like that. So that's one of the reasons why devotees want association of devotees. And in the mission of Krishna consciousness, there's the receiving and there's the giving. We're obliged, we're enjoined, we're instructed to receive, and we're also instructed to vibrate, to extend this same opportunity to others. It follows. One who has nicely received will want to, or a sign that one has nicely received is that one wants to extend the same opportunity to others. You know, compassion is a natural outcome of awakening of Krishna consciousness, and compassion takes shape. Compassion in extending opportunity to others. So one may be big, small, or medium, it doesn't matter. It's speaking of principle. And being a participant in efforts to extend to others, that's part of what helps us become pure. You know, so in other words, supposing one thinks, well, I'm not so qualified, so I have to become really qualified before I can extend to others. And one answer to that is, well, by extending to others, you could become purified. Because it's either hearing, chanting, it's service. It's the mood of receiving and the mood of giving what you've received. And it can be really simple. Really simple. That you have to be a big orator or highly educated or this or that. You don't have to have prior material qualification. Very important message of the Bhagavatam and spoken here directly as well. Prior qualification? There isn't. Just willingness to hear and having received, being in the mood of gratitude to extend to others according to one's capacity. That's our Sankirtan movement, and it's a natural fruit of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Someone wrote to me recently that for some reason, for some number of years, they haven't been hearing Prabhupada's lectures. They didn't explain exactly why. It's not like they had some aversion. But when they started recently hearing regularly Srila Prabhupada lectures, they found themselves really moved by the sense of urgency that Prabhupada had to wake people up or remind people of what they've forgotten, or help them understand what the real purpose of human life is. So part of it is explaining why there's a lack. Why is there a lack of understanding the purpose of life? Because there aren't qualified brahmanas who are living what the purpose of life is and teaching others what the purpose of life is. And the absence of brahmanas, then the whole social structure collapses and it becomes all undesirable things, greed, lust, anger, quarrel, Kali Yuga, for lack of qualified persons who have received and give these six occupations of the brahmana, like over and over Prabhupada would say. So to study and then to teach. And whatever the forum for teaching is, something to one's capacity, teaching something, extending what you have heard. And it's not like you have to be a perfect person before you can extend what you've heard. Just transmit what you've heard. And by that transmission of what you've heard, the whole world becomes auspicious. You want to do something about, you know, the madness. So it starts, it just was hearing Prabhupada say, there was a man in Calcutta, a government officer that came to see him and asked, Swamiji, why is there so much chaos in the world? And immediately Prabhupada answered, because people aren't following Varnashram. Then he went on to say, the head of the social body is the Brahmana, and the Brahman has to be discerning, know what is Brahman and teach others what is Brahman and give guidance to the rest of society. In that absence, it's animal life. And that's why it's chaos. There's no Varnashram, there's no people knowing what their duties are, the purpose of those duties, therefore chaos. So, at least, minimum, Prabhupada was appealing, of course, the bigger level that people should, there should be qualified brahmanas, and qualified kshatriyas, and qualified vaishyas, knowing what the purpose of their duties are, doing those duties, knowing what the purpose of those duties are. And so minimally, just in the elevation of the bhakti process, persons become Vaishnavas, and a Vaishnava becomes qualified as a Brahmana. And then the Brahmanas can give direction to society. So there's a lot of society out there, persons of all different descriptions. And we may not be trained and proficient administrators, but we can all give wisdom, and then there's a purpose of that wisdom that we've received, and that's creating auspiciousness. And then where does that auspiciousness go? There's a purpose behind that auspiciousness. This kleshagni and shubhada. It's to people shouldn't suffer. They should be happy. And when they're happy, they help make other people happy. The Sankirtan movement. It all points to that. There's stages, but it all points to that. Make the world favorable, free from suffering, and experiencing the happiness of remembrance of Krishna. Not an easy task, Kali Yuga, but the principle is there. Let's see if there's some discussion, some of the points here. There's three of this and three of that, and that's easy to, we could go back and expand on those things. Discussion? Point it this way. Yes.
My question is regarding the psychophysical nature.
Fix the sound. No, this is adjust the dials there. Go, keep going.
Krishna says this is decided on the basis of guna and karma.
What is decided?
The psychophysical nature.
Okay.
Not according to the birth in a particular family.
Okay.
So my question is, what is the significance of taking birth in a particular family? Like, say, for example, my parents were Brahmanas, but I don't know whether I'm a Brahmana or not. So what was the significance that I took birth?
Opportunity.
So my nature could be different, but still...
You're given an opportunity by birth with parents that are Brahmanas. Now, what's the quality of parents that are Brahmanas? Could be a whole range of qualities of parents that are Brahmanas, because probably Brahmana by birth, not necessarily Brahmana by guna and karma. But it's the opportunity.
To opportunity for Brahminical occupation?
Yeah, opportunity for the Brahminical training from Brahminical parents.
But later in life, it could also reveal that maybe that's not my...
All kinds of things can be revealed later in life. Like, let's just take children born in families of devotees. There's an opportunity. There's no guarantee. They're going to make choices and et cetera, et cetera. But it's an opportunity. It's like Prabhupada's example is... Someone's born, this is in Vedic culture, someone is born the son of a doctor. So naturally the father is going to engage the son in helping him learn how to make medicines and, you know, so he has an opportunity. But it's not guaranteed he's going to be a doctor or has the quality to be a doctor. It can, all kinds of things can happen, but it's an opportunity. You're born in a wealthy family, so there's an opportunity, but you can misuse it too. It's an opportunity. The significance of birth is in one, a particular family is favorable or unfavorable towards something.
Just a little follow-up, Maharaj, that when you said that this preaching opportunity, so this is available to all, right, in ISKCON, it's not dependent on what is their psychophysical nature, because Lord Chaitanya has ordered it.
I'm not sure what you're asking, but I think the answer is yes. If you're asking, supposing someone's born an unfortunate, someone else is born an unfortunate, and a third person somewhere in between, do they have equal opportunity to become situated in bhakti? Yes. Is that your question?
And teaching others about
same.
Krishna.
Same. Teaching others is Krishna's empowerment. It's not birth or psychophysical nature.
Okay.
Someone can be, you know, let's say a carpenter or, by occupation, by guna and karma quality, someone may be, you know, a truck driver. Someone may be a cab driver. Someone may be a landscaper. Someone may be whatever they may be. By psychophysical nature, acts. And they can present Krishna consciousness equally as someone that has another psychophysical nature, another psychophysical nature.
This is independent.
Bhakti is not dependent upon psychophysical nature.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just one question, understanding. Mm-hmm. The other day with the Chinese devotees, there was a question, when we preach, there are ways to water the seeds and then cultivate bhakti, and then you added a third one, harvesting. Mm-hmm. So harvesting means harvesting from the material world, connecting with the spiritual master.
Well, there's the material harvesting and there's the spiritual harvesting. So which one do you mean? Preaching is the spiritual one. But, you know, it includes, let's say, following her question, supposing somebody has intellectual capacity. So harvesting means to connect that person with some service that's suited to their nature. Some intellectual pursuit. Supposing another person is very simple and they just like washing pots. So harvesting includes the service of according to psychophysical nature, and they'll feel very happy doing something that matches their nature, especially if the person who is engaging them is recognizing the spiritual nature of that activity and not, you know, I'm high and I'm low and all of those kinds of, you know, material conceptions of life. So harvesting means that the fruit is connecting in the holistic sense, connecting a living entity with Krishna's loving service. And then the harvesting comes, that the fruits will grow, the happiness will come, the purification of unwanted things continues, and so forth. That's the harvesting. Just a little sharing. You'll be interested in this. Yesterday from 5:30 until 7 p.m., there was a discussion with the two Chinese GBCs, Chandrasekhar Prabhu and Giridhari Swami, and then some translators, and what they call the overseas devotees. You know, the persons that don't live in China and come and visit. And then finally it was said, yeah, actually not one of us on this call, well, the translators live in China, but not those of us that this call is for, we don't live in China. So anyway, part of the, there's an ongoing project that Giridhari Swami has kind of adopted it as his project for the China Yatra and for the world, is what's the model? When we speak of education and training, which is something you're involved with, what's the purpose? There's lots of classes going on here and there and over there. What's the purpose? When we think of training education, what's the outcome? And then there was all this conversation about measurable, and then, well, what if there's something that's internal, and how do you measure what's internal as well as external, and so on. So their intention, Giridhari Swami's intention, is to come up with, in discussion with some well-known educators in ISKCON, a document that's a simplified version of the outcomes. And the language he was using is, he was making this motion with his hand. There's a cycle, and this connects to your question. Planting, watering, harvesting. So what's that harvesting? What's the outcome? When we start, keep the end in mind. What's that harvesting look like? And so he's really enthused by the project. The person that he's having dialogue with is Prana from Australia, well-known educator. And then collaboration with Borijan and others and others and others. And so, but a document that's, you know, China specific, but it can be education in general. What's the purpose? And if you don't know what a purpose of something is, you're not likely to achieve it. Anyway, so there's lots to say on that topic, but you know, it resonates with your question. Harvesting means what? And the discussion yesterday was, well, one voice was saying it's got to be measurable. And you know, say, but if what about unmeasurable soft things or internal things? Anyway, I was bearing that in mind as I was speaking this morning of and reading the verses, creating auspiciousness. How do you measure that? Or freeing one from sins and tendencies for sins. What's measurable about that? Well, you know, whatever. So it's going to be an interesting discussion refining. But you know, harvesting question, just sharing that message. And once it's out, the idea is to share it with other, you know, very senior experienced educators and see if they want to revise it, refine it. And it doesn't have to be accepted by everybody. It has to be meaningful for the China Yatra. But most likely it'll have its application universally. And there is no such document existing that Prana is aware of.
Line questions, Maharaj. From Atulya Mataji.
Turn the direction. Yes, turn it away. Go ahead, speak.
Yeah. In the world today, the bad impressions are thrown at us. What happens when one chants? Do these impressions go away, or the impact of bad impressions decreases or does not have an effect on the consciousness?
Well, it depends on the quality of your chanting. Done nicely, let's start with that, done nicely, gradually, and then finished. Now, to say they're gone doesn't mean, it's a little bit like this question you were asking, but anyway, to say the sinful reactions are gone. There's prarabdha karma and then there's the aprarabdha karma. Wait a while and some more karma is going to come. So, it can gradually diminish. Prarabdha karma can be diminished, for example, and that her question specifically is vasanas. Tendencies do continue because that's what the meaning of tendency is. You know, the curved tail of the dog. There's a tendency to curve. Or people may have a tendency to whatever. To become angry or to be lusty or to be, you know, not mindful and to, you know, whatever it is. People have tendencies. Just from, you know, living life for so many lifetimes. There's residual tendency. According to Bhagavad Gita, 10.11, Krishna removes the tendency. And Krishna alone can remove tendency. So vasanas are diminished and then potentially completely removed. But there's a qualifier at the beginning of that. Tesham satata yuktanam vajatam priti purvakam. When that condition is reached, then gone.
This question is from Radha. How can animals go back to Godhead if they cannot chant?
Yeah, it's not a good situation. Don't become an animal. But if an animal is a recipient of the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like the dog that went back to Godhead, or we know from the Jagannath Leela, there was a crow that fell in the lake by Nila Madhava, and he went back to Godhead. So there are special circumstances, but don't take your risks. Not to say that you're thinking you want to become a dog and go back to Godhead, but your question is, can they, or how can they? By receiving special mercy. They can be benefited, you know, to skip many, many, many births in the evolutionary scale and come quickly to a human form. And, you know, here's another option. Be born in Vrindavan. But that's not a good plan. Become an animal in Vrindavan. It's not lovely being an animal in Vrindavan. So better take advantage of your human form of life, Radha.
Next question is from Uttama Bhakta Prabhu.
And we have the example of Gajendra. By his past lives, he made a mistake in his past life, but his past life was largely superlative, spiritually. So he went back to Godhead directly from elephant body. Now the crocodile didn't, because he didn't have that elevated consciousness. He was just a cursed Gandharva, and so he went back to being a Gandharva, although he was killed by the Lord. So it's maximize in this lifetime whatever the future outcome may be, we're not certain. If we don't perfect our spiritual life, there may be some, who knows what, misunderstanding or circumstance that creates misfortune. So take proper advantage, human form of life.
Question from Uttama Bhakta Prabhu. Shabari, being not respected by great rishis in the forest, looks like an arrangement by the Lord rather than reflection of their heart.
Rather than what?
Reflection of their heart, which doesn't match their great status. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. Rishis can be austere, but you know, without a pure heart. One can chant mantras and perform austerities and be considered a rishi, but his heart is still, you know, I'm a Brahmin, and here's this lady that's, so they're not, maybe not being pandita samadarshana people. Learned in austere, but not panditas, not on the Brahmabhuta platform.
So next question, another question from Uttama Bhakta Prabhu. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada uses Brahmabhuta stage as pure bhakti stage. In chapter 18, Bhagavad Gita verse, it's being used as a stage preceding to pure stage.
Yes.
Are both okay? Kindly clarify.
Well, I don't know the references where Prabhupada uses Brahmabhuta interchangeably with being a pure devotee. Rather, my recollection is, as the second one, it's preliminary. And, you know, again and again and again and again and again. It's preliminary. All it means is Aham Brahmasmi, and that's preliminary. And you know Aham Brahmasmi, that's Brahmabhuta. Not theoretically, but you know it. That's Brahmabhuta. And it has symptoms, nasochati, nakangsati, samaksarvi, shivoteshu. And then, there's the opportunity to come, mad bhaktim labhate param. That's the consistent way. So if you have heard or read something that seems that he's saying, Brahmabhuta is identical with pure bhakti, it's by far in the minority of references. I don't know, I personally don't recall one. But if you recall one or more than one, fine. It's not the consistent use of the term.
Is that the last question? From Pankajanabha Prabhu. How can we strongly take shelter of the holy name?
How can we take strong shelter of the holy name? By taking strong shelter of the holy name, that's how to. Let go of the other shelters. That's how to. Good association will help you. And continuing earnestly to strive. That's not a guarantee, but that will help you. And Krishna will see your help and then he'll give you his shelter. Prabhupada ki jai.